Since 1931, Financial Executives International has been the leading advocate for the views of corporate financial management. Its more than 10,000 members hold policymaking positions as chief financial officers, chief accounting officers, controllers and treasurers at companies from every major industry. And FEI enhances its members' professional development through peer networking, career management services, conferences, research, and publications. Join FEI today to network with key influencers, understand emerging issues, advocate for corporate finance, and boost your career opportunities. Both individual and corporate membership options are available. Go to www.financialexecutives.org and click on Become a Member. Or look for the link in this episode's show notes.
Hi, this is Chris Westfall, and this is the FEI Weekly Podcast. As an annual celebration of environmental protection, Earth Day means a lot of things to a lot of people. But in the world of finance and accounting, it's an opportunity to take stock on the progress the industry has made in building sustainability metrics over the past years, as well as the implementation and policy challenges facing companies in the next year. In this episode of the podcast, we speak with Mike Wallace, Chief Decarbonization Officer at Persephone, about the opportunities and risks of the ESG movement and what it faces and how financial executives should navigate those issues until Earth Day 2025. Great. Mike, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. We've been working with Persephone for over a year or maybe two. So it's been a great relationship conversation about ESG and financial reporting and sustainability and carbon reporting. But today is Earth Day. Happy Earth Day, Mike. And I wanted to sort of get your sort of level set and given the occasion, like, how would you describe the current state of ESG in general and maybe carbon accounting in particular?
Sure thing, Chris. Thanks to you and FEI and the whole team over there for being such great partners over the last couple of years of Persephone's journey in this space. We're only 4 years old at this point, and it's been a real honor to be partnering with FEI on work like this. It's been an interesting ride, I have to say. I've been at this for 30 years, 20 years in the sustainability area itself and the sustainability reporting. I think there has been a slight cooling of some of the actions out there, partly because of the regulatory developments that have people nervous about stating certain things in public. Also some of the anti-ESG pushback that we're seeing in the marketplace too. Different states are, you know, passing regulations and local laws to stop public pension funds from taking action on ESG issues. And I do have conversations with corporations out there where they're consciously trying to remove the word and phrase ESG from some of their publications. It's like a magnet for backlash. It doesn't mean it's slowing down, though. You know, climate risk is financial risk, and ESG risk is financial risk. So the people that I know in the field that have been at this for a long time are carrying on with the way that they carry on, you know, monitoring all the different standards and regulations that are out there, doing materiality assessments, or in some cases, double materiality assessments. And those brands that have been at it for, you know, 5 and 10 years aren't slowing down. They're only preparing for more rigorous disclosures and more rigorous regulatory landscapes within which to work. So it might feel a little bit quieter out there in the public domain, but I'm not seeing it behind the scenes, Chris.
So, yeah, and I wanted to get to that because there is definitely a discussion in public space about sustainability and what it takes. So I guess from your perspective, you're not seeing any sort of like, and I guess my question, if there's pushback in the public space, are investors just as passionate, or not only passionate, but do they want these metrics and you know, from the companies they invest in?
Many do. Many used to talk about it much more publicly, BlackRock case in point. And many still talk about it, but privately. Case in point, our webinar that we did with you and Clorox and AGCO talking about these very issues. In the private one-on-one meetings, investors are still asking about these, E, S, and G factors. Mm-hmm. Again, the phrase itself might be waning a little bit, but these are still risks. You know, business interruption is business interruption. So thinking about human rights violations in a supply chain, where your factories are, where you get your raw goods from, transportation of products, treatment of people in your own workplace, but also in your supplier's workplace. These are all things that are now built into a conversation between investors and the companies they own. So I don't see that slowing down. There are certain areas of the world, too, that are more advanced on these issues than the United States. Having lived and worked in Australia and in Europe on these topics, U.S. is generally 5 to 7 years behind Europe on these types of ESG matters or sustainability matters. And a lot of U.S. companies that I work with, and still to this day, they don't really look up and look out at the international landscape as much as they should, because many of their products and their services end up landing in other ports in other parts of the world that have regulations that will dictate how they do business there. And so we have a history in this field of ESG, sustainability, of companies being caught off guard suddenly because their goods or services can't be offloaded from ports at ports. So when you think about that, you think even the sovereign wealth funds of Europe, who are doing this because it's part of their commitment, but it's also part of the regulatory landscape in Europe, they're demanding their asset managers, and those asset managers can be public asset managers in the sense of public companies, and they can be private asset managers. Well, if your biggest customer, sovereign wealth fund in Europe, says, I want you to look at these ESG risks in my portfolios, that public and private enterprise is going to do that for their customer. They might not do it real publicly, make a lot of noise about it, but they're still going to have to do due diligence on the thousands of companies in the portfolios that they're managing.
And there's what investor, you know, certainly, as you mentioned, some larger funds overseas, you know, certainly drive. But for our membership, you know, obviously a lot of stuff is driven by standard setters and regulators. And, you know, something that we've both talked about in the past and we've seen in discussions around ESG was the SEC's rules around sustainability. So, and those were announced last month. So I guess my question to you is how has the dialogue changed that when you're talking to companies around sustainability since the SEC rules were put out?
Yeah, it's been a fascinating experience to go through. When I started, when the Biden administration came into office, I was still working at a consultancy called ERM. And I had about 40 companies that were part of an ESG ratings working group. And we gathered every 6 weeks to talk about the ratings world, right? And that's the kind of the gateway to the investor. And when the Biden administration got in and they started to make the noise about this SEC rule, the group asked me if I could get someone from the SEC to talk to us. And I reached out through LinkedIn to Christina Wyatt. And by luck and good fortune, she said, yeah, I'd love to talk to a group of U.S. companies about what they're experiencing as part of the process of developing the proposed rule, which also leads to the public comment period. Lo and behold, a few years go by, I joined Persephone. Christina works with us here at Persephone too, as does Emily Pierce. And you've interviewed Christina on your podcast before, so yep, People can tune in, hear her directly. You know, Christina having been the lead author on that proposed rule, we pay very close attention to where it lands, but also where other international regulatory developments are unfolding. And so between Christina and Emily and Allison Heron-Lee, who's on our advisory board, we are constantly monitoring the regulatory developments. During the piece when this was still in proposed state and public comments were occurring, we had a number of conversations here at Persephone with general counsels, chief sustainability officers, and others that are leading the effort around carbon accounting and climate risk disclosure. In one particular case, I think is quite telling. U.S. company is in the medical devices space. wanted to have a call about where the proposed rule might land. We had that conversation. The team that was on the call said, you know, we're just going to wait and see where things land, and then we'll decide what we do. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, you could tell that they were getting their ducks in a row and getting ready for regulatory changes. And they had a pretty robust system in place, but they weren't ready for a real formal disclosure of their carbon emissions data. So lo and behold, about 3 months go by, and the UK's own National Health Service, you know, it's the hospital system of the United Kingdom, puts out an RFP, like many companies put out RFPs, but this is the National Health Service. They buy a lot of stuff. And that RFP lands in that same company's inbox. That same company had been selling millions of dollars worth of equipment to the hospital system in Europe, as well as other places in Europe. And in the RFP, in the middle of the RFP is this simple little table that says, please fill in your scope 1, 2, and 3 and explain how you got the numbers. It doesn't say you have to, but that company came racing back to us. They actually shared that RFP with us and said, we need to get our numbers in order because our largest customer, one of our largest customers, is expecting this of us. Now that's happening around the economy, whether we are aware of it or not. We, even at Persephone, get RFPs that are asking us about our own ESG performance. Mm. If you look at the S&P 500, more than 80% of them are doing sustainability reporting. Many of them that do sustainability reporting talk about their supply chain and supply chain engagement. And we know RFPs are coming out continuously into the market that are asking suppliers to not only bid with a good price and good quality and a delivery time, but also with some ESG or carbon information. So this supplier ripple is probably stronger than what's happening with the SEC right now. Mm. And so I think for U.S. companies in particular, it's not just about looking at what your U.S. peers are doing. You need to look at what your international peers are doing, because investors are not just looking at you in the U.S. They're looking at a global portfolio of your entire sector. And your customers are the next thing you should look at. What are your customers saying and doing when it comes to ESG? What are their commitments that they're making that are going to require them to turn around and ask suppliers to step up too? That's how I'd suggest companies in the U.S. start to prepare.
Yeah, and expanding a little bit, I know, you know, when it comes to, you know, these sort of disclosures, you know, there's one of the things we have also discussed in the past is you know, the structure within companies to sort of prepare that information, get it ready for disclosure. And there's been over the past 18 months, a lot of discussion regarding sustainability controllers. You know, something that, you know, our members are, you know, controllership, you know, that's core to our membership, but there's this new burgeoning role of sustainability controllers. Do you see that role continuing to grow, and if so, why?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, that was work that we did with you and with Dylan and FEI, surveying of members, that we first heard about the phrase ESG controller in titles. And I remember being at one of your conferences where there was an ESG controller on stage, mm-hmm. talking about her new role. And since then, we've seen dozens of them, and you can just look in LinkedIn and do a search on the title, and you're finding, you know, dozens of these people now out there. I think it's going to get bigger and bigger, because it's a combination of, you know, a lot of this work that we do at Persephone, the carbon accounting work, starts with the C-suite and the CFO primarily. Where you spend your money is where your carbon emissions are coming from. And so the CFO holds all that information, and control of that data is crucial, especially as we get into a regulated space of disclosure. So what we find now, 18 months later, is the general counsel and corporate secretary, CFO's office, ESG controller, and CSO are quite regularly part of the conversation. There's also going to be generally the chief information officer or chief technology officer involved, because now we're getting into data that's in the digital cloud. And there's data security issues that are always of concern. And if you think back, you know, 20 years ago, there wasn't the title Chief Sustainability Officer. So that emerged. 5 years ago, DE&I emerged as a title. And now we've got ESG Controller. What might be next? I mean, my title's brand new, Chief Decarbonization Officer. Right. There will be more titles in this space. And I think the finance team and the technology officer and the legal teams are all going to be shifting and ebbing and flowing and needing to work together, but they're going to need some specialists on their teams too. And so I think ESG controller is just the first indication of what's coming.
One of the things I know you're pretty passionate about is sort of like the, obviously the disclosure issue, but also benchmarking, you know, benchmarking your carbon reporting and accounting against other companies, other industries. And, you know, Persephone has focused a lot on that. Why is that so important? You know, what are you hoping to achieve, or what do you bring to the table when you're sort of benchmark this sort of information?
And the main thing is the competitive nature of all of us. You know, we will always look around and see what our peers are doing or not doing. And in the corporate space of sustainability consulting, the world that I've worked in for 20 plus years, oh, I would say 95%, if not more, of my clients would always ask me, what are my peers doing? And that was part of the scope of work. You know, how many peers do you want us to look at? Which peers do you want us to look at? And in many cases, since I was mostly working in North America, companies would identify peers that are just North American oriented. And I would say, you know, we should expand this to Europe and Asia because you have some peers in your sector that are probably doing some things that are more advanced than you are. We want to know what's out there, setting the stage and setting expectations in your industry. And so benchmarking becomes a key indicator for all of us, you know, and when you do benchmarking year after year, your position might change. And so it's just like market analysis. And so, you know, working with FEI, we're developing a database right now with you all to help any company look at the S&P 500 and sort it by sector to see what their sector's up to. Are the companies in that sector making commitments? Are they making disclosures? If so, can I see what they're doing? And yes, you can, because everything that we're putting into this database is publicly available. Now, it'll change over time, and you'll want to go back and maybe benchmark every quarter, every 6 months, or at least every year. But that benchmarking is not only about you and your peers. Like I said earlier, it's really about looking at your customers. They're dictating where your business needs to go in the future. If you want to keep doing business with your biggest customers, it's probably pretty wise for you to keep tabs on what they're doing and be there to help them reach their sustainability commitments, as well as their carbon accounting and climate risk commitments.
Yeah, yeah. And the benchmarking and understanding the work we're both doing, both FBI and Persephone, is important. I wanted to sort of take a step back a little bit, looking forward. You know, there's obviously an election coming up in the U.S. You know, there's a couple elections going on in Europe as well. What's your expectation about how that's going to change the conversation around the sustainability, you know, carbon accounting and disclosure?
I think there'll be, in some corners, there'll be some sigh of relief, depending on, you know, if the election goes Republican, because there will be a thought that maybe some of these requirements get taken down, dismantled, reduced in their scope. That very well could be. If the election goes Democratic, I think we're going to see, you know, full court press on more of this and more of the momentum that was created during Obama and then reinforced during Biden. I think at the end of the day, for U.S. companies, you're still going to have to play in the global markets, and you're still going to have a customer, even a U.S. customer, that has made a big, substantial commitment and may have 10 years, if not more, of sustainability reporting already out there in the marketplace, and they're not going to back down from it. It's part of their brand at this point. They're known for this. They're attracting capital, they're attracting talent, and they're attracting customers because of who they are. And again, the S&P 500 stats play it out. Just Google it. How many in the S&P 500 are doing sustainability reporting? And many of those companies are doing it in a very robust way, with even having it verified or assured by third parties. And because the global markets are so active right now with ESG, especially in Europe and now in Asia, this is not going to stop. You know, you want to do businesses in these other jurisdictions, you're going to have to step up. So would you just completely dismantle your sustainability program because of the election? I would think not. I think it would be an unwise thing to do. You might just put a different title on it, and you might start to orient it more towards risk, because that's really where this lives the most.
So final question, again, Earth Day. I want to ask you, what are your hopes for the sustainability movement, the ESG movement in general, especially going forward? Let's say it's Earth Day 2025. What's your hope for it over the next year?
I'm rather obsessed with the supply chain ripple that I witnessed before in my career. I've witnessed it through a variety of environmental regulations that have evolved that have required companies to then turn around to their supply chain and say, I have to do this, therefore I need you to do this. That train has left the station. And what I think is most fascinating to me is what the U.S. General Services Administration is doing with their climate action scorecard. It was first developed during the Obama administration, was taken down during the Trump administration, and put back up in a more robust form during the Biden administration. It's an indicator of what other nations are already doing. And if you sell to the U.S. government, you are publicly listed on this climate action scorecard as having taken action on climate change or not. And that's a pretty interesting signal to the marketplace. Now, I think states can do that same thing. States buy a lot of things. Universities buy a lot of things. Hospitals buy a lot of things. Universities and hospitals actually have large global associations where they all spend time together talking about responsible procurement. So this ripple is not going to go away. You're only as good as your worst supplier. And so when it comes to carbon accounting, everyone is someone scope three. Mm. And so whether you like it or not, believe in it or not, you're going to have one large customer that's going to turn around to you at some point in an RFP or directly and verbally and say, look, I'm trying to figure out my scope three. I've made some very substantial commitments. And for me to know my scope three, I at least need to know your scope one and two. And not only do I want to know your scope one and two figures, I would like you to prove it with a third party verification of your figures. And that's where the world's going. Mm. It's just a matter of when and how fast.
Terrific. Those are my questions. I really appreciate taking the time today, and happy Earth Day.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the work you're doing at FEI, and thank you for having us.